In this week's gospel reading, we pick up right where we left off last week, smack dab in the middle of a series of Jesus' teachings from the Gospel of Luke that have come to be known as the Sermon in the Plain. Not to be confused, mind you, with the Gospel of Matthew's rendering of the teachings called the Sermon in the Mount. Now, the Sermon in the Plain that we'll look at today is full of incredibly challenging teachings that take the wisdom of the world and turn them upside down. That was certainly true for the section we looked at in last week's passage, known as the Beatitudes, where we were told that those who found themselves in the midst of difficult circumstances were the ones who were truly blessed. And if that wasn't hard enough to promise, this week we get an even greater challenge, the call to, and I quote, love our enemies. So listen carefully as I read these words from Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 38, as read from Eugene Peterson's The Message. And then after you've heard them, let's come back together and see if we can figure out how to actually live into the spirit of those words. To you who are ready for the truth, I say this: love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer for that person. If someone slaps you in the face, stand there and take it. If someone grabs your shirt, gift wrap your best coat and make a present of it. If someone takes unfair advantage of you, use the occasion to practice the servant life. No more tit-for-tat stuff. Live generously. Here is a simple rule of thumb for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you. Then, grab the initiative and do it for them. If you only love the lovable, do you expect a pat on the back? Run-of-the-mill sinners do that. If you only help those who help you, do you expect a medal? Garden variety sinners do that. If you only give for what you hope to get out of it, do you think that's charity? The stingiest of pawnbrokers does that. I tell you, love your enemies. Help and give without expecting a return. You'll never, I promise, regret it. Live out this God-created identity the way our Father lives toward us, generously and graciously, even when we're at our worst. Our Father is kind. You be kind. Don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. Don't condemn those who are down. That hardness can boomerang. Be easy in people. You'll find life a lot easier. Give away your life. You'll find life given back. But not merely given back with bonus and blessing. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begets generosity. Thus ends the reading. So, what does it mean as Christians to take those words attributed to Jesus seriously? How would it look to do so? Well, this week, we have a beautiful example of that very thing unfolding right here in the United States, in the city of St. Louis, to be exact. So let me tell you about it. And before I do, let me take a moment to say the sermon illustration I'm about to use is a little more complicated than usual. But if you hang in there with me, I promise the payoff will be worth it. So the situation I'm referring to involves the second largest Protestant denomination in the United States, the United Methodist Church. And this weekend, representatives from the church from around the globe are gathering in St. Louis to try to settle a battle that has been waging in that denomination for 46 years. A battle full of people labeled friends and enemies. Let me tell you about that epic battle. The United Methodist Church was created in 1968, 11 years after our own beloved United Church of Christ. Now, when leaders of that church gathered for their first meeting in 1972 to establish the rule book that would guide them, a phrase was inserted into the rule book that started a cultural war. Leaders from the South inserted a sentence that read, and I quote, "Homosexuality was incompatible with Christian teaching." The embers of that decision glowed for 12 years. And then in 1984, they ignited into a wildfire when a second clause was inserted into the rule book prohibiting the ordination of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons. The flame of that second controversy raged for 12 more years until 1996, when the final piece of the puzzle was put into place for social conservatives. The final piece said that same-sex unions could not be performed in their churches, and any United Methodist clergy person who officiated at such unions could lose their ordination. And for the next 22 years, a bloody, not-so-civil war has been waged. Those on the right have worked hard to ensure all of the pieces of legislation stayed in place. Those on the left eventually figured out they couldn't change the rules, so they began to blatantly ignore them. And with each passing year, things grew uglier and uglier. Many within the church regularly used the word enemy to describe their sister or brother of the faith who lie on the other side of the issue. Well, what's the big deal about difference of opinion? Some of you congregationalists out there might wonder. Why doesn't each side just do what they feel that God has called them to do? Well, here's the thing. The United Methodist Church is not a congregational system that allows individuals and local churches the freedom to do as they so choose. No, they are instead structured like the Catholic Church, meaning that there is just one set of rules that everyone is expected to follow. What to do? What to do? Well, things got so bad in the denomination that they decided they would call for a special meeting of delegates from around the world to settle the matter once and for all. The delegates, they decided, would meet this very weekend and choose from one of three options as to how they would go forward. Option number one is called the traditional plan. It would keep the rules exactly as they are and allow those who disagree with them what they call a gracious exit, meaning that perhaps when the dissenters left, they could take their church buildings and their pastors with them. Option number two is called the One Church Plan. It would take out all the current rules regarding homosexuality and allow each area of the country to establish their own rules. In other words, they would function a lot like we UCC churches. And option number three is called the Connectional Conference Plan. This plan would restructure the denomination. Currently, local churches are grouped together in conferences that are based upon their physical location. All churches, for instance, in Southern California are automatically in the Southern California Conference. So option three would scrap that and instead put churches in conferences based upon their theology. A traditional church would be put in the traditional conference. A progressive church would be put in the progressive conference. And those who are okay with permitting diversity of theology would be put in a unity conference. And by Tuesday morning, those delegates from around the world will pick which of those three options the second largest denomination in the United States will choose. Now, as you're hearing this, I know what some of you are thinking. Pastor Craig, this seems like exactly the opposite of Jesus' challenge to love your neighbors. How does such an approach reflect Jesus' way of being, you might wonder? Well, let me see if I can help answer that for you. For the answer to the question doesn't just have to do with those pesky United Methodists. No, it has to do with the way each of us can live into our own differences with those in our lives we see as enemy. And to answer the question, I want to use a few words from a series of commentaries that were particularly helpful to me in making sense of Jesus' words. If you want to understand those words from Jesus, Charles Bug wrote, you need to understand that for Jesus, our response to others is not predicated on their behavior. No, it's instead predicated on something else, God's love and grace. In fact, if we ever hope to achieve that ability to love our enemies, we can't expect to get there relying solely upon our limited personal resources. As one of the authors of that commentary continued, we will never love our enemies without an amazing grace, a grace that transforms us and makes us different than we currently are. So let's put that into the context of our example this morning. As many of you here know, I was born, baptized, and raised in the United Methodist Church, and I stayed there until 2001. And when I left 17 and a half years ago, neither of the two sides were willing to cede even an inch to one another. Each side claimed to have an exclusive grasp of God's will, and each side was willing to say awful things about the other. So where are they today? Well, let's just say a different place. Listen to these words spoken by the leading spokesperson for the traditionalist camp, a gentleman by the name of Rob Renfro. The progressives aren't going to change. We're not going to change. They don't want to be complicit with a church that teaches something they think harms people. And we don't want to be complicit with something we think is contrary to God's desire for us. So for both sides, the question then becomes, can I stay in a denomination that's leading people astray? Some might miss the power of that statement. But buried within it is an important point that had been missing for decades, an acknowledgement that good and faithful Christians are not of like mind on the matter. As one delegate to the meeting, a pastor from Sugarland, Texas, noted, in this country we've had at least 13 splits in Methodism since 1784. We always find our way back. We're still family. But maybe we shouldn't sit with each other for a while. And therein, friends, lies what I believe is the takeaway from this morning's reading about how we can love our enemies and negotiate our difference. For you see, it would be easy for some of us to misunderstand the words from today's reading and conclude that Jesus wants us to be doormats, to ignore our sense of call and purpose and simply give in with our enemies, all in the name of love. Well, I would respond, that's not it at all. For I believe that the pursuit of love always gives us choices. Sometimes that choice is to continue to live together faithfully. And sometimes that choice is to separate and to release one another with blessing, acknowledging that our differences might be too great and hinder us in our ability to live out God's call for our lives. You might think that's a newfangled idea in the church today, but it's not. For that's exactly what the Apostle Paul did 2,000 years ago, when the pillars of Jerusalem, Peter, James, and John, called Paul before them and insisted that Paul preach a gospel requiring men to be circumcised, and a gospel that required everyone to observe strict table fellowship rules. Rather than argue with them or call them names, Paul embraced the spirit of Jesus' teaching today and instead blessed those pillars of Jerusalem to continue in their ministry that was intended to target Jews. While Paul himself left to pursue his ministry with the Gentiles in his own manner. Today, we are simply living into the example of those first disciples. So in closing, let me just say this. You may not be like the Apostle Paul, and you might not have to chart the course of a religious tradition that will guide believers around the globe for two millennia. Nor will you have the responsibility of being a voting delegate and deciding whether or not the second largest denomination in the United States will continue to minister together or separately. But I can promise you this. You will go out and have differences to negotiate with those you care about. Differences that might cause you to want to reach into your bag and pull out a label and attach it like friend or enemy and treat your loved one according to the label you attached. Well, friends, when you encounter those differences and the fear that come from difference starts to kick in, let me leave you today with these words of promise by Susan Hyland. When the disciple of Jesus understands that his or her actions are flowing out of God's abundance, to which he or she belongs, an abundance which belongs to him or her as well, then doing something as simple as turning the other cheek becomes an act of resistance to evil, an act that has the power to transform others and the power to transform the world. May each of us here this morning have the good sense to rely on God's love and grace to enfold friend and enemy alike, so that we can live in a world shaped not by our desires or our opinions, but rather by God's desire for us. And may we have the strength to live through each of the stages, including a stage of separation with love and blessing that are needed to get us there. May it be so. Amen.